today I'm going to basically say a few obvious things about why we do lattice spectroscopy, and then talk about actually spectroscopy. And are there any interesting questions left in spectroscopy for us to study that we haven't already seen here?
You're on the back of your room.
Yeah, you can't move. You are blocking. You are blocking.
This was Don.
You use the whiteboard, yeah. So you don't need.
You have to move your left.
Well, no, I was just going to say that you're too fast for me.
But he chose the wrong color background.
No, that's what I mean. No, it's a perfect background.
You have to move.
I put background theme and the back blackboard theme, and that's as close as I get to it. So we don't need the lights.
You have to move your laptop.
Your
laptop.
It's not transparent.
Otherwise, I can read on the back.
I'm learning.
Yeah, I thought I'd do it. Don't make the screen
slowly. We can leave the lights probably mostly on.
Actually, the ones up there make it bright.
Yeah.
Those lights are wrong.
Yeah. If you illuminate the screen brightly.
Oh, wow, it has chalk dust on there.
Now I need to get to play. Let's see. So, I want to give an overview of the present status, talk about some new states. Some spectroscopy has been fairly dead for 20 years or so. And in the last few years, it's become exciting again for a number of reasons. Maybe new narrow states, some of which will survive, probably. Two of which will certainly survive. Three of which will certainly survive. And then I want to talk a little bit about what the lattice what we might do to look at the spectroscopy of these and other states. Okay, now I have this fancy thing.
The sensor.
Oh,
yeah. Pointing at you.
Yeah. Well, I'll learn this. We're getting back. Okay. There's something I have to do here first, so I can just point with my finger.
And when your sensor is sitting on your notebook, so it should point to your notebook.
No, I'm just trying to, this, you have to.
There's a laser pointer.
This deal for it.
That's
right. So I learned all these things quick to lift the laser and watch out for it. So, first why study spectroscopy? Well, the most obvious reason is, of course, to test lattice methods. And that's why we're mostly doing it at this point. Fermion actions, we have a whole set of them. We want to see how they work. We have against some very precisely known numbers. And that's the spectrum. Certainly the spectrum of hadrons for the low-lying states are very precisely known numbers. The things we're mainly interested in, chiral symmetry and extrapolating to the physical limit for the light mesons in particular. And we'll hear a lot about that. And to eliminate the artifacts of the lattice that a particular action can give you or reduce their effects so we can more closely, systematically approximate. And of course, with gauge actions, the main idea is simply to reduce contributions from lattice artifacts at a fixed lattice spacing. And finally, treating the fermion determinant. I put this in just so that we could have to say that tomorrow we'll talk about the quartz root of the fermion determinant. But of course, that's the big deal. I'm only going to think now about what the challenges are really for the full, unquenched QC, lattice QCD, since I think the quench time is nearly over. Once we've done that, the highest priority task, I think, for spectrum is to determine the quark masses. And we're doing it at the same time, of course. And here's just a relatively recent review. There are still just different methods have some significant differences. And of course, determining the mass is a two-stage process. There's the hadron mass tells me my mass parameters in the Lagrange on the lattice, but then gonna have to match that to a parameter for the continuum Lagrangian at some scale. So there are the renormalizations that the perturbative or non-perturbative matching that I have to do, and it depends on how I do that. And that's certainly something which there's a lot of work on. I would also argue that soon we should look seriously at mass differences. We have tremendously well-known numbers for these mass differences. They are simply an up-down mass difference in your lattice and EM projections. So these are nice things to look at. Maybe if people are interested at some point later this week, I'll talk about it. Read a session on how to do this for unquenched theory, since it's hard, much harder there.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there a non-EM contribution from higher order terms in the local effective Lagrangian value minus to isospin breaking? So M up is not equal to M down. Suppose there is no electromagnetism in the world.
Yeah.
Then still the pi plus minus would not be equal to pi naught, the mass.
You mean higher, well.
And in the effective Lagrangian, I don't know, does it come at p to the 4? So is there a term there? You see, because everybody learns in school, you know, this difference is just proportional to the electromagnetic.
Right.
But
there is
even no, no, we learned there's more than that. There is an F.
Now, how big is that one? Is that one much smaller than this one?
They're comparable. Doesn't it depend on the non-linearity? And it depends on the non-linearity. If it's sort of linear, then it's going to cancel out, right? Which is why everyone believes your story is not big. So I guess it's small.
No. So, no. Does it come from all the people, the first terms in the area?
What you're saying is plus down over 2 is different from half up, up, and half down.
Now,
okay.
I mean, the pion is quicker. I mean, for the pion, it's linear.
There's a chi u, chi dagger u term, right? And that wouldn't give you a split.
It's some up minus down square for the pi plus pi.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm not. So what? So, but it will give you a contribution which makes up and down non-zero. The other way, if you know it by m pi. If you had QCD without electromagnetism and you measured the mass of the pies, you could extract the term by looking and you would get a non-zero answer for what m up minus m down are in the Lagrangian.
I think for the pion case, electromagnetic really
knows
everything.
I thought there would be much.
Not sure.
In one case, you get an up. Half up, half down in the thing. In the other case, you get 50% of the time up, up, and 50% of the time down, down.
Yes.
And that's the same thing if it's linear. But if it's non-linear,
it's
but
it is non-linear at all,
no.
And to the force. No.
Yes, that's right. But it's a small non-linearity.
Yes.
It's not the leading.
No, well,
it's not the dominant.
So
that's right.
Yeah, but is that of the same order as the other terms of all the p to the force out there? I mean, there are these lambda, the lambdas, the parameterizing.
No.
Well, the little l's have a log, where the lambda enters, and those lambdas of all the 1GV typically. I mean, they're known with an accuracy of 200% plus minus, but still. So, is it?
From a practical point of view, you have to know those L's in order to make this.
To find the EM piece.
Yeah, I believe so.
But is there an argument that says that that thing is negligible relative to the EM piece? Why is it that we always just say, you know, this is all explained by EM and not by
the question? I think it's because if
go ahead.
So in the K and the nucleon case, there seem to be comparable, the isotope violation and electromagnetic. And the pion is higher order, so people normally assume that it's smaller.
Yeah. Oh, but if alpha were 1,000 times smaller than it is, then it would stop. At some point, it would stop being
right.
Low. So how much smaller does alpha have to be to for it to
stop? I don't know. We'll talk about that in the session where we see if we can do this. Okay. However, there are a wide variety of systems to study to see this. And I guess my own point of view actually is that what all you're trying, in a way, what you want to get here at the bare, you can fundamentally avoid the parallel Lagrangian discussion at all. If you simply look, well, I don't want to talk about this.
Well, that sounded interesting.
Why don't you put
it on? You got it. Finish your sentence.
We'll discuss it. Yeah. Otherwise, I won't get it. We'll come back to
brilliant
that.
Brilliant salesman for this. Yeah.
Okay, and the final thing, after we've done all that good stuff, is to actually gain insight into QCD dynamics itself. We can make predictions, conceivably, and I'll argue there are things still to predict. New states, of course, if there were any narrow blue balls or narrow four-quark or pentaquark states, for example, we should be able to see them, maybe, nonetheless. And then what you can do to look at the dynamics is to vary the parameters. For example, the glue-ball meson spectrum versus the quark masses. That would be very interesting. Not something we're likely to do in the near future, given that we have one limit where the quark masses are all, the internal quark masses are all infinite. We know that one. And hopefully we'll have another point on the line close to the physical values of the masses, and everything in between is interesting too, the spectrum. And eventually you might vary SUN. These are all things I'd love to do someday, but they're fun. And then you can, of course, add new parameters to look at the dynamics, like, well, not large.
Not a size, am I right?
Far off, somewhere in between. Then you can add other representations for quarks and look at what the spectrum looks like. And keep going back here. So we had a nice talk, actually, already about the process, which has been this transparency shown a number of times, sort of the status of spectrum on the collaboration MILC, HPQCD, and Fermilab for the heavy states and the light states, some of the light state spectrums, the pseudoscalars, the vectors and axial vectors.
Those who don't care, why there are 2 points next to the neutron?
I think they're two different calculations.
Two different sources. so there's a little bit of something to be straightened out.
They agree.
Hmm?
They agree, yeah.
One is better than the other.
One has larger error bars.
I throw it away.
obviously, got too small error bars.
I see. What's to be straightened out is that it doesn't work.
What's to be straightened out is the better sources and the better parallel extrapolation. This is very naive.
And then here is the.
What happened to the A1?
There's the A1 and B1. Well, there's the physical values of them.
They're
at the same mass. I wouldn't worry at all about this. I'll show you in a minute. Okay, so anyway, it looks very good.
Well, no, it doesn't.
On
the row. we don't have any slot now.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
The row doesn't look so good.
And the A0's not even plotted, and that would look at this.
Right.
No, the A0, yeah, that's right. There are also the things like the A to the A to prime, and put on here.
And nobody can do that.
Look at this.
There's nobody checking it unless you do the A to. It's not a quantum field theory.
Okay. Okay, so what do we need to do here again? IK and eta, eta prime vacuum structure, you need to deal with the K. The rho is a prime example of that. And we're going to hear a talk on that. We're going to hear a discussion later.
The A1 also, right,
is
actually unstable on that.
I'll show you that in a minute. And then there are you'd like to look at highly excited states, and I would like to look at these. So here are the light meson spectrum from the PDG-04, okay? There is the pi, and there is probably a radio excitation of the pi. This little plot here has the uncertainty of the mass in the vertical direction, the width the average width, if you wish, in the horizontal direction in units of 100 MeV here.
Okay, this is awful.
Huh?
An awful scheme.
You're showing these things. Yeah. Oh, I actually like it.
Like the uncertainty in the angle.
Because if you look at it, you can see how difficult it's going to be to do anything, say, in this spectrum here, with the widths and the uncertainties and the widths of these states. And you look at here's the case for the isotriplets, right, with spin one, so the row, that's,
It's on there. It's the one with the spell mask.
It's nobody can read anything.
Yeah,
where's the
pie? Remember, the
it's all there. It's all there. That's why everybody can see. Listen, they have such a nice pie on, Even if it's up here somewhere, it's still wonderfully isolated from everything else in the spectrum. And if you get to the spin triplets, it's even messier, as you can see, and we'll struggle to get this. I'm sure we'll get eventually get this.
And those other pies are what?
They're radio excitations in the quark model.
Same quantum numbers.
Yeah, same quantum numbers. These are same quantum numbers up the line in terms of the quark notation. That is, these are L equals zero states in quark notation, L equals one and L equals two. So they have different J's, there are different J's, but if it's spin triplet, then there are three different states. If spin singlet has one state, which quark given. And then if you go to the isosinglets, here's the isosinglets. This is interesting. This is 50 years, by the way, more than 50 years of hadron spectroscopy and experiment, okay? For example, here, this was recently split. This was one state before. It's been split into two by the PDG because it sort of looks like maybe there are two bumps there. And yet there are arguments that say, well, no, a radio excitation ought to look like a sort of two-bump structure, and so this should really only be one. If it's two, it's very important because the quark model can't actually account for having an extra state there, and this could be a blue ball candidate, conceivably. Similarly, here, but it's sort of dependent on, the fact that whether there's one or two isn't settled after a very long time, and it will probably oscillate back and forth for a very long time to come. If I look at the isospin singlets, spin triplets, well, there's this thing.
What's the width of the omega?
No, it's the F zero.
This is the F zero. Yeah, this is the F zero that. You might ask why you bothered to put in. And I think there's been a lot of debate about what to do about that, because this is its width. That's the average width. It actually has a range of widths. And this is its mass uncertainty. Again, if this state is here in addition to this state, then you can't, this is something that you can't get the quark model. And this is something having to do with the blue structure. The degrees of freedom that you would be involved in, let's say. Now we get to the strange isodoublets, and in fact, things look a little better. It's now beginning to look pretty good. I mean, comparatively, years have been spent in disentangling this area here. But you notice that there's actually, that you can sort of see the Reggie trajectory here. That as you go up in L, the highest spin, this number is now the J. The highest J is sort of the narrowest state in each of them, just as you sort of would expect. That is high. If it's large angular momentum, as you go up, it doesn't have a large width, although they're getting pretty large by the time.
I think some of this data is 30 years old, by the way.
Sure.
I mean, it's not new. I mean, it could do with some, improvement.
Probably so, and, with. The question is, does anyone think that the lattice is going to improve, say, this situation here?
No, I'm trying to say that people shouldn't get too paranoid if they don't reproduce experiment. Because
I missed, of course, a rather significant point I was going to make. Well, significant. Here's the A1. and its width. So I wouldn't worry much about the fact that you don't actually hit the center of the mass right on in your lattice calculations. It's not quite clear to me.
No.
Yeah, the central value is a degenerate with the B1. That's going over here. But the uncertainty is pretty large. So one has to be aware of these sorts of things when you're doing lattice gouging. It's fine for the ground states that are very narrow, but there are a lot of experimental uncertainties left in this excited spectrum.
These plots really do bring out Chris's point that we should look at the eta and the eta prime, which are clean experimentally.
Yeah. Okay, baryons. Well, I didn't try to do this with baryons. It's just obvious. Beyond the ground states, you know, you can have orbital angular momentum and vary its pair of the quarks, and you can combine in various ways. And there are experts in this, but it's not me. But if you just talk now about adding heavy quarks, when I add a C quark and replace the usual baryons, the decaplet, an octet of baryons, I get this one C quark gives me the next ladder up here at an SU4, and then two give me this, and three is the omega minus triple, omega double plus triple C. Well established enough to make the summary tables, there were 14 states with charm that have been observable very honestly. There are 22 total. And in the B, if you add the B quark, then I have the same thing with B plus the charm and the B together. And that gives me a total of 35 more states, of which one has been observed so far. So these are all, almost all, I might have to hedge my bet on the triple B omega minus, but almost all of them will be observable at an OACB.
And that one's just because of the production?
Yeah, it's a question of production.
Is there a physical or theoretical reason why this state is observed? Is it the easiest?
It's decay. I'm sure it's decay modes. Decay modes are always there. You know, you got a clean decay mode, a clean channel of decay modes that you can, is the reason we can observe things. And in a machine where you've got tremendous luminosity and lots of production of these heavy quarks, you'll sort of work your way up the decay channel. You work your way up the decay channel. You get more and more, you'll add back in and reduce the statistics to find these things.
I think it's when you need to see the
okay, never
need to see
it. Must be backwards. There are clearly some, there are doubly charmed baryons that have been seen by Celex. The observations have some splittings which are fairly unexpected. I don't know what will happen with that, but this is splittings that are isospin violating splittings, or this state is some excited, the two states are separated by about, these two states are separated by about 75 radii MeV, which is not right for this kind of splitting. And so we don't know the status yet, but they're beginning to start to see those sorts of things. There's much left to be seen. Okay. Now, in the last few years, there's actually been two very, very interesting new states that have been found. Surprising because they're, in the first case, because they're an excited state in a heavy light system, which is extremely narrow. And this is, in effect, and the second case has to do with thresholds and decay and all sorts of interesting things. And then there are other states that have been found as well in last-ditch charmonium spectrum. The H sub C and the eta C, the eta C prime have been, the eta C prime have been rediscovered in its right mass, and the H sub C has been discovered, has been seen. And now we've seen an unequal mass, the lowest state. So it's been very productive. So why has it been so productive after many, many years? It's the existence of very high luminosity, new facilities that can approach things in a different way. And as we go to the next generation of high intensity, high luminosity facilities, we'll see lot more. Okay, almost. So these are the best. Well, this is about 2 years old, and it was a big surprise at the time. There it is. There's the peak. It decays by, this is a D-sub-S. It decays to a D-sub-S ground state and a pi naught. It's a zero plus state. It's the first narrow zero plus state with a light quark in it that's ever been seen. Because usually these have very broad, they have S wave decays to the ground state. So if it's kinematically allowed, then it will be a very large width, and that's what you see in the usual spectrum. And then, of course, this is a heavy light system. There has to be a partner of it. Here it is, the 1 plus discovered at Clio. This was at Babar. This was discovered at Clio not long afterwards. So the quantum numbers are fairly well established, 0 plus and 1 plus. Oh, and so they disagree, and everyone in the lab should be very happy with this, that they disagree with relativistic potential models, relativistic quark models. They actually had predictions, and I had some too even, and they're up here, and the states are down here. A nice disagreement. Very, you know, it's actually a case where we didn't have the state yet, and usually these are very wide, so the existing spectrum didn't give you much clue where they were, and I'd say it failed pretty miserably. The lattice, this is an old, this is probably an old lattice. I don't know if there's any newer one. Tell me if you know it, but this sits at threshold, so it's not quite clear. These are the threshold for a strong decay for this state, and this is the threshold for a strong decay of this state. They're both below the threshold, so they don't have any strong decays.
There's new lattice out from UKQCD a year ago, which agrees with that or even goes a little lighter.
Uh-huh, good. So, I mean, the lattice has to give the right answer. We know that.
Not necessarily with the quark masses where you...
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to that soon. So, I want to talk about the phenomenology first. And this is an idea that Bardeen and myself, Hill had, was an idea of Bardeen, Bill and Chris Hill and others from a while ago that was applied to this. So you can ask yourself, if you just think in terms of models, if you have a heavy quark anti-quark system, you can imagine the picture of the heavy quark potential, that is that the gluons adjust themselves quickly relative to the quark motion. And so you can describe the physics by calculating some static energy that you can actually measure on the lattice and then move these quarks in that effective potential. In fact, that works very well. Right? You can also directly do it. And both ways are available. But this is a way to sort of think about the dynamics. Now what happens is one of those quarks becomes lighter and lighter. It's no longer true that whatever makes up the gluonic degrees of freedom can be neglected, can readjust itself on a time scale short compared to the motion of quarks, the light quark. And so in fact, you have to include them in the calculation, and not just in the energy, but conceivably even in the end, it may make a contribution to the angular momentum. So this is sort of one reason that the model won't work, might not work, even though they've had a lot of success in describing already existing states.
So the success was heavy light systems?
Not too much.
But that plot you had, it worked above and below for them.
Now let me just show you back there, I guess. These two here.
Yes.
Yeah, but those were known. And they're not different than they are. Basically, you can guess these from very simple, you can guess what they were from very simple expectations. It's not as strong a prediction as something that's totally unknown and doesn't agree with what you would have expected from a lighter spectrum.
No, but this story of somebody adjusts, the gluons adjusting,
right, exactly.
Not adjusting, I mean, why does the story care about which states?
Well, I'll give you an alternate, I agree.
You're removing his predictions, you're saying.
No, I'm not removing him. I agree with you that the story doesn't tell you that one way or the other, but it does tell you you should worry about the model in general, okay? But what I'm gonna then say is that here's the approach that was used to do all the calculations. And it's also a little bit flaky, but it may turn out to have some reality. Imagine that chiral symmetry and confinement could coexist.
You mean unbroken chiral symmetry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in UCD. But maybe in some, let's imagine you could be somehow close to that. Then if you ignore explicit chiral symmetry breaking terms, light hadrons could become massless because, like baryons, for example, satisfy the torque. Well, you can't, but you can satisfy the torque synonym condition. Fermions running around the loop. And however, even in that case, heavy light systems could not become massless because the heavy quark still has its mass. So for heavy light systems, what you'd have is parity W. So, in that world, heavy light states would be parity double. And then the question is, if you make that a model like that, how far is QCD away from that? So this is sort of the totally opposite end from the potential model. Just to try. Now, am I going the right way? Up and down are impossible. Okay. So here's another way to say the thing. Here's a realistic heavy light spectrum. There's splitting between states in it. So these are the J and the parity of the states. And this is what would be the L equals 0, L equals 1, L equals 2 radial excitation, just going up the spectrum in various ways. In the heavy quark symmetry limit, that's a limit in which you ignore the corrections of 1 over the heavy quark mass. These two states become degenerate because they're just, they have the same light or quantum numbers. So here's what your spectrum looks like. You have two states, and the symmetry predicts nothing about this spectrum, but it predicts that as m goes to infinity, this goes to this spectrum. If you were to have this kind of a symmetry, what it says is that in some limit which you're quite far away from, these parity is double, so that these two states, in fact, would be degenerate. So you'd have a bigger symmetry associated with these states. And what does that give you? Well, it's clearly badly broken symmetry. But if you imagine there's a symmetry, then you can talk about relations that, even though they're badly broken, that come from the symmetry. So you can write down...
Is this the chiral symmetry that's going to give you the parity?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Assume that woke.
You're assuming that somewhere there's a point where you have chiral symmetry unbroken and QCD confinement. It's not where we are. But if you imagine that there's some remnant of it, even in full QCD, in real QCD, then you could imagine that in some respect, and it's a badly broken, obviously, it's broken, there's no small parameter to expand about. So it's pretty much in the class of model where the potential models are. But if you take that approach, you can then write down a multiplet that has the interesting feature that ground state S waves and orbitally excited P, some of the orbitally excited P states are in the same multiplet. And this gives relations between the couplings. Or if you were to say it another way, to say the same thing, is you write a usual heavy quark, chiral Lagrangian down, then you can write it down for every one of those multiplets that I showed before here, and interactions between them. What this will give you is relations between those coefficients.
If you were to write down a chiral, old-fashioned this kind of chiral, ion and sigma fields, sigma fields have a vacuum expected value. Would there be any remnant of this chiral symmetry in that case? If you had old-fashioned, spontaneously broken chiral symmetry?
you could, yeah, you can define a remnant, you can define a symmetry which is then badly broken by the expectation. So you can tell the terms which have the symmetry and those that don't, but actually that's in the paper. Okay, back. Okay, so then you can make a lot of predictions, actually, based on that. And all these were, in fact, predictions. The only thing that was known at that time was actually that this transition existed. And here's the sort of present state. And this would be the same, it would be invisible, these white bars, except I haven't quite done this. And where there's a line in the middle, there's been a measurement, non-zero measurement. Where there's no line in the middle, there's an upper bound. So the theory looks, in this case, with the pion transitions, one that the chiral Lagrangian should actually tell you a lot about. It's a very good agreement with the present. These are a little bit, for the photon transitions, a little bit off, but in rough agreement. And the others, no disagreement there. So let's ask some issues about this system. So that's an interesting model, but I don't know exactly how to do anything. I'd be curious if there's any way to sort of make a lattice version of something like this, but I don't know how to do chiral symmetry and any model in which you have chiral symmetry and confinement of that same sense. Anyway, there are some clear predictions just from the systematics of the DCMS system. Is that you'd expect analog states in the BCMS system. And although you don't know exactly what the mass is, the center of gravity.
You just give it up.
Huh?
They used to be a tight temporal dimension. You still have confinement in the space dimensions.
I don't know. There might, okay. I don't, I'm
but only the states are limited, so I don't know what.
Yeah, I don't know how you talk about the radio.
But except there are excitations still.
There might be some funny phase in the lattice system. In any case, they're clearly, you'd expect that the visa best, these same states are probably below threshold. Although, again, one would be, has there been a calculation of this?
Yep.
And the answer is?
They are, with the usual caveats about dealing with the wrong quarks and extrapolating, you know. Yes.
Okay. So with the wrong quarks.
In fact, I think as many as 6 states might be below threshold. No, but it gets better as you go to BS from Chantry.
No, ultimately it just sort of looks the same because the heavy quark cancels out. It could get better because charm isn't very heavy, right? That's the uncertainty. So.
No, I mean it's just the result.
I'm not arguing why.
It just turns out that it looks as if the things are more bound.
Okay, that's great.
On our
so there's even more to say.
I don't understand why. It's just the answer.
Yeah, I'll talk about a little bit about the decay, coupling decay in a minute. But what changes here is actually that the relative strength of the radiative transitions and the pion transitions change. I think at this point, I should have said at the last transparency that interpretations with four quarks, log, D, K, molecule interpretations have no reason to exist. You might be right, but you can predict it all with the standard state, and all the rates come out right. So far, there's no evidence for anything other than two quarks, but with a slightly lower mass than you would have expected. Anyway, and one of the things that was surprising was the small radiative transition. People expected it would be dominated by the radiative transition as opposed to this isospin-violating pion transition. And that turns out to simply be related to the fact that what comes in the E1 transition is this factor of 1 minus the charge of the heavy quark, mass of the light quark, and over vice versa. And for charm, that cancels to a high degree. So and that gets squared in the E1 rate. So in fact, that's the value for the charm strange compared to sort of naive one. And this is so square that, that's a tenth of what you expected if you just say 1 for that. And that's the answer to why you didn't, you don't see the photon. Now, in the case of the, as much as the ion transistor, the case of the B sub S, this is actually slightly bigger than one. The effect is near to one because the mass scale of the heavy force is increasing. And, but, so that means that radio transitions will dominate. But that is something you expect that has no, you know, it's just what you expect. Okay, one other point about this, and so one other very interesting thing for lattice, particularly unquenched lattice, is that if you look at the regular D system excited states, so this is without a strange quote, with an up or down equal. Here's the math, one of the estimates they keep changing, but here's one set of estimates of the mass difference between the D zero star, that's the zero plus state and the zero minus state. And here's the width. Okay? So in other words, this state is pretty hard to find because it has a width comparable to the mass. It's a very wide state, and it's on a background of these decays, and so you have to make sure you've got the background on. It's very difficult to get the width, experimentally to get the width or where the center value is of mass. But notice that if you take, so there's a lot of uncertainty in this, but if you take the difference between this and the C sub S, you see that the difference between this excited state and the ground state when I put a strange quark in is very well measured because these states are narrow. And it's 100 MeV less than it is here. So if this is some sort of chiral limit with the light quark getting, you know, it's something that somehow if the quark is getting lighter and lighter, it's more in this limit, why isn't this even smaller or at least the same? Or you know, why is it bigger? That's a good question. And you can do a calculation just using a chiral loop. However, you have to play some games with it. And I have done such a calculation where you only look at the S-wave transitions because they're the dominant ones. And you want to cut it off to mimic the sensitivity to the wave function. So you just put in some cutoff. You don't let it have a matrix element above some cutoff. It's exponentially damped above some cutoff. But then you can calculate the loops. And these numbers are all given from your chiral Lagrangian. Okay, so these probably are not. Here's the shift that you get from that simple-minded calculation as a function of the splitting between the two states, that is the ground state, zero minus, and the zero plus P wave state. Here's the shift, both are shifted down initially because the D zero is clearly below threshold before. It is below the mass of the zero plus in the pion, and so this is also shifted down. This is the excited state. It's shifted down more, and then as you get high enough, it can decay, and so you get far enough above threshold that the contribution is getting positive. But of course, I've also cut it off. So eventually, it's cut off. Now I can do the same. That's for the D sub S. And this is just some measure. If I use those numbers, the width that I get, the contributions to the width of, say, the ordinary D state with the zero plus, and here's experiment somewhere in this range. So it sort of agrees with this kind of splitting you get about this width. So the model sort of hangs together, as all that says. And then you can look at the splitting between, say, the D sub S and the excited state and the ground state as a function of this cutoff. You see there's a fairly significant dependence on the cutoff. However, if you look at subtracting this shift from this, from the shift from with the D system from the shift in the D sub S system, then most of the large momentum behavior of this thing has been cut off by canceling by two cancellations that you have here. So in fact, up to about 400, you get a behavior of this difference, which is a physically measured difference. that agrees, that doesn't have much variation on my views. So instead of modeling independently, this says it's about an 80 MeV relative shift. Model independently in the sense of cutoff, not model independently. This is just a simple model. So the conclusion is that the coupling to decay channels near threshold results in large SUV violating effects arising from light source kill events on mass devices. This is something that is a very straightforward thing to try to see in the lattice. Such a boomly light quark mass, you should be able to see how these shifts, the states shift.
Can I quote a bit of experimental data, which I found quite intriguing? If you look at the decay of the charm strange thing that you've just been talking about, zero plus to zero minus emitting a pion, you can define a reduced coupling constant, and that's a good way to proceed because then the phase space is taken out, and it's about a half in some convention. If you do the same thing for the kaon, this is the strange, the kappa, the 4020, you get the same number. And if you go through our calculation for what it would be for a bottom strain, a bottom system, now it's not known experimentally, but we could calculate it on a lattice using techniques which I may talk about later, we get the same number. And amazingly, the coupling constants are half for strange quark with light quark, charm quark with light quark, bottom quark with light quark. The coupling constants seem to be surprisingly insensitive. The width will be very sensitive.
Yeah.
But the coupling constant is actually surprising me anyway, insensitive to these delicate things that could be going on.
Well, we've seen some examples of that sort of independence of various decay constants as a function of masses more than you'd expect in other places. But yeah, I mean, that's I would be less surprised by the change from C to B. Well, actually, I'm not sure I'm surprised by any, because it's not clear what the what mass is really effective in these decay constants. So you say that they, basically that quark looks like it has some constituent mass of 300 or 400 MeV when you do this, get this matrix up, that it wouldn't make much difference whether it's strange or not. So it's interesting. That's an interesting point. I guess I wouldn't be as surprised that it's about the same, but still, it's good to know what it actually is. Okay. Well, the other state, so that's that state. I think the lattice can really do a lot to understand the situation there. I think it'll turn out that at least the difference between the up and down case and the strange case is purely due, or mostly due, to the fact that thresholds are nearby, and that so that means there'll be a very strong dependence on the quark mass as you get the quark mass in the region where you're near the threshold. The X, okay, that's been seen by time is short, seen by four experiments. Bar most recently. It's a wonderfully narrow state again. And narrow states are great because you can study a lot about them, and great for the labs because they don't decay before you can, assuming you can find the operator division of the state that doesn't decay away right away. Here are the masses. That's the mass you get from these four experiments. And here's the D star threshold. This is for the neutral uncharged. And you see that this is right, absolutely right.
Both
in error.
Both what channels was this in?
It's pi, I'm sorry, pi sign. It makes a 2 pi on transition to a sign. So the natural and its width is less than 2.3. In models, this is a natural interpretation. Okay, I'll show you here. The decay, pi psi is the discovery mode, and it's the only mode that's been seen. However, there might be a sighting in this mode, however, recently by Bell. This mode is not a real omega, it's 3 pi near the omega, but not at the omega pole. And it's not clear if this will survive. But in any case, it's definitely seen in this mode, and I'd say right now only clearly seen in this mode.
What are its quantum numbers?
Well, that's a very good question we don't know the answer to.
But why doesn't it have a single quantum?
Oh, it's, well, okay, it's isospin, it has isospin. You imagine it's isospin zero with C. The naive expectation is a CC bar state, okay? That would be what you want, okay? And then, okay. So, so there are actually, this state is now observed, so 10 states have been observed, 9 states have been observed in the CC bar system, all of them below the DD bar threshold. This is the 3770, was seen a long time ago. It's above threshold for decay, but it's 20, around 20 MEUI, fairly narrow. And there are 3 more D states in the model. The 2 more of the trip, this is the lowest member of that spin triplet. This is the J equals 2 and J equals 3 members of the spin triplet. And this is the spin singlet, J equals 2 state. So any one of these 3 would be a candidate in principle. These 2 states by quantum numbers, don't decay to DD bar, so they're expected to be narrow. This state does decay to DD bar. This is the J equals 3 state, so it isn't necessarily. So what's wrong with the interpretation of it as a, I don't think I would agree. What's wrong with the interpretation of this as a Charmonium state? Well, the expected mass of this state, most naive expectation is a J equals 2D state in the Charmonium system. But its mass would be expected to be about 3815. So this is much higher than this, 60 MeV higher than expected. And the radiative transitions would be expected to be, again, here, expected to be a significant contribution there unseen. So there's no signal. They have upper bounds on these transitions, all of which you would expect to see if it were the 3D2 state. So there have been studies which basically are phenomenological ways to include light quark pairs. And I'm not going through it all. The issue is whether this is a charmonium or a molecule. That is, it's right at threshold for DD star. It's kind of a nice interpretation that it's right on the threshold, that it's there's an attractive force we know between DD star and these two long distances, so maybe this is a molecule. So those are the 2 natural interpretations of this thing. You might think that including effects of loops, I mean, how do I know if it's a molecule or not? Well, I would argue that for narrow states near threshold, you just count states. And if you have one state, you don't argue about whether or not it's a molecule or not. It's just a state which has a large mixing with extra loops in it. And so you have to find it. For it to be something new, it has to be a new state in some channel. And this is, again, something which the lattice should eventually be able to do. In fact, maybe not so. Anyway, you can make a model of coupling the decay channels, and it works pretty well for the D state that's already observed, and then you make a model for the other 2. Now, the one thing that's interesting here is that in the 3D3, which I said was above threshold of decay into the DD, it's actually, if you say it's at 3872, it's not very wide. That's because it has a F wave amid decay. So it's very suppressed. It's of the order of an MeV. So in fact, it's also a candidate, which is a surprise. I guess, well, nobody did the calculation before, so. here's what you get when you're done doing that calculation. The model is the parameter. Once you have the model, there's no more fiddling with the parameters. And you get this, so this is then fit to the Nolan's D state. And you find that the 3D3 actually comes out pretty close to where you would have expected it to be, where this X state is. So that seems to work all right. So maybe it is a terminal state. And this model also, as I said, it gives the known width well. It gives some small mass shift to the AC prime, which might make it be better with models. It seems to be a little less split than expected. That's another thing that you could do with Solaris, depending on how that splitting goes. However, it doesn't, so it's a mixture of states, and so it suppresses its transition, but not enough. But it's, at least in this model, it doesn't give enough suppression. So here, where we stand, I think, on this state, if you allow the other eye, we know this transition. If you use as a model for this transition, the transition between the knowing lead state, the 3D1 and pi psi, which is somewhat uncertain, but even so, would be much smaller than this rate would have to be. So if you take a conventional, what I'm saying is, if you take, you use the 3D1, which is known to have a decay to pi psi, and say that in the limit that they were degenerating mass, this state, if it were a D state, would have the same transition rate, then that rate tells you that the E1 transition rate is too large. If you allow this to float to a larger value, there's more phase space available, you don't know how to model that, then that frees you from the radiative transition somewhat. And so if you allow it to float, two states sort of remain as possible, the 3D2 and the 3D3 state. They're the only viable. You don't know which way to go. Okay, so I'm going to put here's the summary. As a positive, there are many narrow states that remain to be observed. But here narrow, I mean 10 MeV. I'm picking 10 MeV as a width, less than 10 MeV. Of the known hadrons, there are approximately 60 of those. Okay? All baryons, all mesons and baryons, including heavy, heavy light, and light light. A rough count of what I expect in addition to that is 100 additional narrow states. So we're free to predict 100 of these. Some of them are pretty, we know pretty well. Others, I think, will be surprised. I think there is, particularly in the baryon spectrum, some of the excited states will be quite narrow, and there may be other examples which you know, the lattice can, which we'll be able to see, and the lattice will be able to actually predict. All the new states here involve at least one heavy quark, pretty much as long as the fully light spectrum. And you know, models that people have been using, none of us have been using, but well, no, I've been using. Nobody sensible would use, have really failed. I mean, in general, they fail on two basic principles. Certainly, in the case when you include a light quark, they fail to incorporate whatever the chiral dynamics is. Whatever you want to argue about it, there's no sense in which you have to make the case, and this is a case that's been made for a long time, that, well, the quark, after you give it effectively a constituent mass, and then it's just like a quark model. But maybe that won't turn out to be quite true. And they don't include the unquenching, if you wish, of the theory. Narrow heavy light states. As I said, there's some models you can make that seem to work all right. But one thing you know that there is that you have to have, I think, is that there's large mass shifts due to coupling decay channels. And it probably is part of the explanation of the pattern. You could argue that maybe this is the whole explanation, all this is not relevant, at least for the mass. And in fact, you know, if you see where the state goes. Now the lattice, of course, if there's any of this here, eventually the lattice would, how close you are to it, but it's hard, you don't directly disentangle. The lattice just gives you the right answer eventually without disentangling those pieces. So you have to understand how to disentangle it. But by the behavior as you let quark mass, light quark mass get lighter, you certainly should see that kind of shift in relative spectrum between charm up and charm strange. For heavy, the first point is that all the remaining D states in the charm system are narrow on the scale that we talked about. And a proper calculation has to include these large effects from non-perturbed Berkeley loops. So predictions based on models helped relieve some of the difficulties identifying the x as one of these two states, but it isn't clear that they're enough. And if this is a more accurate state, then you should see that there's all these other three states should still be there, and there's another state, which is the expected from the quark model for the new spectroscopy, partner states, here crisis spin is not zero. There's likely to be an analog state in the BB bar system, and all these lattice calculations are spectrum.
Comment about molecular states.
Yep.
It's very frustrating that on a lattice it's rather hard to, in my opinion, I'd like to know if someone's got the right idea, how to tell if a state's a molecule or not.
Particularly something like this would be very hard because it's right at the threshold.
Well, people have been talking about the charm strange d-meson also as a possible molecule.
Right.
I think, you know, wearing my other hat as an ancient phenomenologist,
yep.
You're really only going to get a molecule if the two bits are still molecules. And so it's really like pion exchange that's in play. And you have to have a long-range force, so the bits act like molecules, not just a four-quark state. People, when they talk about a molecular state, they're not always very clear if they mean a four-quark state or like deuterium, which is really a proton and a neutron going, you know, around far apart most of the time, you know? I mean, and when you look through these states, most of the suggested molecular states are not molecular states at the very best. I mean, they may have a mixture of KK bar, and that's something the lattice can do fine. And the trouble with the lattice, it doesn't tell you the answer. It just says there's this tremendous Fock space, and we calculate it, and we get the answer, and it's right.
Well, you count, if they're narrow, though, you simply count the states.
I don't know that's right. I've been struggling for about a year as to whether the A0 980 is
not narrow.
A0 980 is narrow. It's at the KK bar threshold. If anything's a molecule, that could be one.
Yeah.
And I can't commit, I don't think it is. But I can't, you know, it's very hard to pin it down on a lattice to do the calculation, particularly since we don't use quite the right quark masses.
Well, in principle, I mean, you can do it by creating with different operators. You can create with a four-quark operator, you can create with...
And it's a mixture of both. I know the answer to that. I've done that.
Try and see which dominates.
Neither dominates.
The question is really, isn't the question, I mean, what its shape looks like. I don't know.
It's the wave function, I think. If the wave function was,
I mean, once you're above threshold, what the state looks like, I'm not sure that I know that it matters in some sense, right? Because it's really how many of them there are.
This state does decay, therefore it's always got a mixture of quark anti.
Yeah, right. That's what. Right. It's got a mixture. It'll naturally have. Once you have light quark loops, every state that will have some in a mixture. If it has a wave function where the two, if I think of a heavy system, which is much easier to deal with, as I move the two heavy quarks apart, I will get contributions with light quark loops running around in it. Now, does that make it a molecule? I mean, is there a sense to that? I think you just have to count states. You can't say that You can't say that it's a molecule or not. I mean, what's the difference? Yeah, if you had something where they're very far apart and a pion exchange.
We did that.
Major contribution.
There's actually BB ground states, two B mesons. Turns out there's a pion exchange at the heavy quark limit. B can go to B star, everything a pion, right? But
that's the equivalent of
ground states of two B mesons. And those predictions are great because they can be really hard for the experimentalists to test, right? I mean, so they go look at the BB. Not BB bar, BB.
Oh, BB.
Yeah, not BB bar.
But you can get an attractive channel in the BB star as well. That's the analog of this X. So you could do that one as well. This one, the X is nice, though, that it's right at the threshold. I mean, if there's one to look at to see if you can make this work, I think that's actually a very nice one. Or in the B system, there, you know, if it's a molecule, there'll be one. If it's charmonium, then the X is just an accident that's a threshold. Very, very, you know, surprising accident that within an MeV is right at the threshold. But there should be no such accident in the B system. So, but if it's a molecule, if it's another state, then the B system ought to have the same thing. In B, B star bar should have a state right at threshold, just like the DB star.
Nice old paper of Weinberg in the ancient past about how do we know the deuteron is a bound state of the proton neutron and not the fundamental thing. And it basically winds up to mean that there's a nice Schrödinger equation. I don't know if this agreement describes it really well. It's the same question.